prepared. They were safely stashed in the abandoned cages below the old prison tower at Hellgate. Kaz had made a few inquiries when he'd visited the harbor to contact Van Eck. After the disaster at the Hell Show, the cages had been flooded to purge them of beasts and bodies. They'd been empty ever since. Matthias had hated the idea of letting Nina go anywhere without him, especially in her state. But Kaz had convinced him that keeping her and Kuei aboard the Ferryland would leave them exposed. Kaz marveled at his own stupidity, dumber than a pigeon fresh off the boat and looking to make a fortune on East Stave. His greatest vulnerability had been right beside him, and now she was gone. Jesper was staring at Weiland, his eyes roving over the black hair, the golden eyes. "Why?" he said at last. "Why would you do this?" Weiland shrugged. "We needed leverage." That's Kaz's voice talking. "I couldn't let you all walk into a hostage exchange thinking I was some kind of insurance." "Nina tailored you?" "The night we left Jerholm." "That's why you disappeared during the journey," said Jesper. "You weren't helping Matthias care for Nina, you were hiding." "I didn't hide. You! How many times was it you standing beside me on the deck at night when I thought it was Kuei?"
"Every time." "Nina might not be able to put you back, you know. Not without another dose of Param. You could be stuck like this."
"Why does it matter?"
"I don't know," Jesper said angrily. "Maybe I liked your stupid face." He turned to Matthias. "You knew. Weiland knew, Inej knew, everyone but me."
"Ask me why, Jesper," Kaz said, his patience at an end. Jesper shifted uneasily on his feet.
"Why?"
"You were the one who sold us out to Pekka Rollins." He thrust an accusatory finger at Jesper. "You're the reason we were ambushed when we tried to leave Ketterdam. You almost got us all killed."
"I didn't tell Pekka Rollins anything. I never..."
"You told one of the Dime Lions you were leaving Kirch, but that you'd be coming into big money, didn't you?" Jesper swallowed.
"I had to. They were leaning on me hard, my father's farm."
"I told you not to tell anyone you were leaving the country. I warned you to keep your mouth shut."
"I didn't have a choice. You had me locked up in the Crow Club before we left. If you'd let me..."
Kaz turned on him.
"Let you what? Play a few hands of three-man bramble? Dig yourself deeper in with every boss in the barrel, stupid enough to extend your credit? You told a member of Pekka's gang you were about to be flush."
"I didn't know he'd go to Pekka, or that Pekka knew about Param. I was just trying to buy myself some time."
"Saints, Jesper. You really haven't learned anything in the dregs, have you? You're still the same dumb farm boy who stepped off the boat."
Jesper lunged for him, and Kaz felt a surge of giddy violence. Finally, a fight he could win. But Matthias stepped between them, holding them each back with a massive hand.
"Stop! Stop this!"
Kaz didn't want to stop. He wanted to beat them all bloody and then brawl his way through the barrel.
"Matthias is right," said Weiland. "We need to think about what's next."
"There is no next," Kaz snarled. "Van Eck would see to that. They couldn't go back to the Slat or get help from Per Haskell and the other dregs. Van Eck would be watching, waiting to pounce. He'd turn the barrel, Kaz's home, his little kingdom, into hostile territory."
"Jesper made a mistake," said Weiland.
"A stupid mistake. But he didn't set out to betray anyone." Kaz stalked away, trying to clear his head. He knew Jesper hadn't realized what he was setting in motion. But he also knew he could never really trust Jesper again. And maybe he'd kept him in the dark about Weiland because he wanted to punish him a little. In a few hours, when they'd failed to make contact, Specht would row out for them in the longboat. For now, there was nothing but the flat gray of the sky and the dead rock of this miserable excuse for an island, and Inez's absence. Kaz wanted to hit someone. He wanted someone to hit him. He surveyed what remained of his crew. Roddy still hovered by the wreckage of the longboat. Jesper sat with elbows on knees, head in hands. Wyland beside him, wearing the face of a near stranger. Matthias stood gazing across the water in the direction of Hellgate like a stone sentinel. If Kaz was their leader, then Inej had been their lodestone, pulling them together when they seemed most likely to drift apart. Nina had disguised Kaz's crow and cup tattoo before they'd entered the ice court, but he hadn't let her near the R on his bicep. Now he touched his gloved fingers to where the sleeve of his coat covered that mark. Without meaning to, he'd let Kaz Reitveld return. He didn't know if it had begun with Inej's injury or that hideous ride in the prison wagon, but somehow he'd let it happen, and it had cost him dearly. That didn't mean he was going to let himself be bested by some thieving merch. Kaz looked south toward Ketterdam's harbors. The beginnings of an idea scratched at the back of his skull, an itch, the barest inkling. It wasn't a plan, but it might be the start of one. He could see the shape it would take. Impossible. Absurd and requiring a serious chunk of cash.
"Scheming face," murmured Jesper.
"Definitely," agreed Wylan. Matthias folded his arms.
"Digging in your bag of tricks, Demjin?"
Kaz flexed his fingers in his gloves. "How did you survive the barrel?" "When they took everything from you, you found a way to make something from nothing."
"I'm going to invent a new trick," Kaz said. "One Van Eck will never forget." He turned to the others. If he could have gone after Inej alone, he would have. But not even he could pull that off. "I'll need the right crew."
Wyland got to his feet.
"For the Wraith!"
Jesper followed, still not meeting Kaz's eyes.
"For Inej," he said quietly.
Matthias gave a single sharp nod. Inej had wanted Kaz to become someone else, a better person, a gentler thief. But that boy had no place here. That boy ended up starving in an alley. He ended up dead. That boy wouldn't get her back.
"I'm going to get my money," Kaz vowed. "And I'm going to get my girl."
Inej could never be his, not really. But he would find a way to give her the freedom he'd promised her so long ago. Dirty hands had come to see the rough work done.
46. Pecker. Pecker Rollins tucked a wad of Gerda into his cheek and leaned back in his chair to survey the raggedy crew Doughty had brought to his office. Rollins lived above the Emerald Palace, in a grand suite of rooms, every inch of them covered in gilt and green velvet. He loved flash, in his clothes, his friends, and his women. The kids standing before him were the opposite of anything properly stylish. They wore the costumes of the Comedy Brute, but no one got access to his office without showing his face, so the masks had come off. He recognized some of them. He'd hoped to recruit heartrender Nina Zenick at some point, but now she looked like she might not last out the month. All jutting bones, dark hollows, and trembling hands. Seemed he'd dodged a bad investment there. She leaned against a giant Fjorden, with a shaved head and grim blue eyes. He was huge, probably former military. Good muscle to have around. Where did Kaz Brekker find these people? The boy next to them was Shu, but he looked far too young to be the scientist they'd all been so desperate to get their hands on. Besides, Brekker would never bring such a prize to the Emerald Palace. And then, of course, Rollins knew Jesper Fahey. The sharpshooter had run up an astonishing amount of debt at nearly every gambling den on East Stave. His loose talk had put Rollins wise to the knowledge that Brekker was sending a team to Fjorda. A little digging and a lot of bribes had yielded the where and when of their departure. Intelligence that had proved faulty. Brecker had been one step ahead of him in the dime lines. The little canal rat had managed to make it to the ice court after all. It was a good thing, too. If not for Kaz Brecker, Rollins would still be sitting in a cell in that damned Fjorden prison waiting for another round of torture. Or maybe looking down from a pike atop the ring wall. When Brecker had picked the lock on his prison cell door, Rollins hadn't known if he was about to be rescued or assassinated. He'd heard plenty about Kaz Brecker since he'd risen to prominence in the dregs, that sorry outfit Per Haskell called a gang, and he'd seen him around the barrel a few times. The boy had come from nowhere, and been a slew of trouble since. But he was still just a lieutenant, not a general. A terrier nipping at Rollins's ankles. "Hello, Brecker," Rollins had said. "Come to Grove?" "Not exactly. You know me?" Rollins had shrugged. "Sure, you're the little skiv who keeps stealing my customers." The look that passed over the boy's face then had taken Rollins aback. It was hatred. Pure, black, long simmering. "What have I ever done to this little pissant?" But in seconds the look was gone, and Rollins wondered if he'd imagined it altogether. "What do you want, Brecker?" The boy had stood there, something bleak and mad in his gaze. "I want to do you a favor." Rollins noted Brecker's bare feet and prison clothes, the hands shorn of his legendary black gloves, a ridiculous affectation. "You don't look like you're in a position to do anyone favors, kid." "I'm going to leave this door unlocked. You're not stupid enough to go after Bo Yulbayer without a crew to back you. Wait for your moment, and get out."
"Why the hell would you help me?"
"You weren't meant to die here." Somehow, it sounded like a curse. "I owe you, Brecker," Rollins had said as the boy exited his cell, hardly believing his luck. Brecker had glanced back at him, his dark eyes like caverns. "Don't worry, Rollins. You'll pay." And apparently the boy had come to collect. He stood in the middle of Rollins's opulent office, looking like a dark blot of ink, his face grim, his hands resting on a crow-handled walking stick. Rollins wasn't surprised to see him, exactly. Word had it that the exchange between Brecker and Van Eck had gone sour, and that Van Eck had eyes on the slat, and the rest of Kaz Brecker's haunts. But Van Eck wasn't watching the Emerald Palace. He had no reason to. Rollins wasn't even sure the merch knew he had made it back from Fjorda alive. When Brecker finished explaining the bare bones of the situation, Rollins shrugged and said, "You got double-crossed. You want my advice? Give Kuwe to Van Eck and be done with it."
"I'm not here for advice."
"The merchers like the taxes we pay. They let the occasional bank heist or house break slide, but they expect us to stay here in the barrel and leave them to their business. You go to war with Van Eck and all that changes."
"Van Eck's gone rogue. If the merchant council knew..."
"And who's going to tell them? A canal rat from the worst slum in the barrel."
"Don't kid yourself, Brecker.
Cut your losses and live to fight another day."
"I fight every day.
You're telling me you just walk away?"
"Look, you want to shoot yourself in the foot, the good foot. I'm happy to watch you do it, but I'm not going to ally with you. Not against the merch, no one will. You're not caught in a little gang war, Brecker. You'll have the Stadwatch, the Kerch Army, and its navy arrayed against you. They'll burn the slat to the ground with the old man in it, and they'll take Fifth Harbor back, too."
"I don't expect you to fight beside me, Rollins."
"Then what you want? It's yours, within reason."
"I need to get a message to the Ravikin capital, fast." Rollins shrugged.
"Easy enough."
"And I need money."
"Shocking. How much?"
200,000 kruger.
Rollins nearly choked on his laughter.
"Anything else, Brecker? The Lance of Emerald? A dragon who craps rainbows?"
"You have the money to spare, Rollins. And I saved your life."
"Then you should have negotiated back in that cell. I'm not a bank, Brecker. And even if I were, given your current situation, I'd say you're a pretty poor credit risk."
"I don't want a loan,"
You want me to give you 200,000 Kruger? And what do I get for this generous gesture?
Wrecker's jaw set. My shares in the Crow Club and Fifth Harbor. Rollins sat up straighter.
You'd sell your stake?
Yes. And for another 100,000, I'll throw in an original decapel. Rollins leaned back and pressed his fingers together. It's not enough, you know. Not to go to war with the Merchant Council. It is for this crew.
This crew? Rollins said with a snort.
I can't believe you sorry lot were the ones to successfully raid the Ice Court.
Believe it.
Van Eck is going to put you in the ground. Others have tried. Somehow I keep coming back from the dead.
I respect your drive, kid. And I understand.
You want your money, you want the wraith back, you want a bit of Van Eck's hide.
No,
said Brecker. His voice part rasp, part growl. When I come for Van Eck, I won't just take what's mine. I'll carve his life hollow. I'll burn his name from the ledger. There will be nothing left.
Pekka Rollins couldn't count the threats he'd heard, the men he'd killed or the men he'd seen die.
But the look in Brecker's eyes still sent a chill slithering up his spine. Some wrathful thing in this boy was begging to get loose. And Rollins didn't want to be around when it slipped its leash.
Open the safe, Dottie.
Rollins doled out the cash to Brecker, then had him write out a transfer order for his shares in the Crow Club and the gold mine that was Fifth Harbor. When he held out his hand to shake on the deal, Brecker's grip was knuckle-crushing.
You don't remember me at all, do you? The boy asked.
Should I?
Not just yet.
That black thing flickered behind Brecker's eyes.
The deal is the deal, said Rollins, eager to be done with this strange lot.
The deal is the deal.
When they'd gone, Rollins peered through the big glass window that overlooked the gambling floor of the Emerald Palace.
An unexpectedly profitable end to the day, Dottie.
Dottie grunted agreement, surveying the action taking place at the tables below. Dice, cards, knacker's wheel, fortunes won and lost, and a delicious slice of all of it came to Rollins.
What's with those gloves he wears? The bruiser asked.
A bit of theater, I suspect. Who knows? Who cares?
Rollins watched Brecker and his crew moving through the crowded gambling hall. They opened the doors to the street, and for a brief moment, they were silhouetted against the lamplight in their masks and capes. A cripple, trailed by a bunch of kids in costumes. Some gang.
Brecker was a wily thief and tough enough, Pekka supposed. Inventive, too.
But unlike those poor stooges at the Ice Court, Van Eck would be ready for Brecker. The boy was going into a real battle. He didn't stand a chance.
Rollins reached for his watch. It had to be about time for the dealers to change shifts, and he liked to supervise them himself.
Son of a bitch, he exclaimed a second later.
What is it, boss?
Rollins held up his watch chain. A turnip was hanging from the fob, where his diamond-studded timepiece should have been.
That little bastard!
Then a thought came to him. He reached for his wallet. It was gone. So was his tie pin, the Kalish coin pendant he wore for luck, and the gold buckles on his shoes. Rollins wondered if he should check the fillings in his teeth.
He picked your pocket, Dottie asked incredulously.
No one got one over on Pekka Rollins. No one dared. But Brecker had. And Rollins wondered if that was just the beginning.
Dottie, he said,
I think we'd best say a prayer for Jan Van Eck.
You think Brecker can best him?
It's a long shot, but if he's not careful, I think that merch might walk himself right into the gallows and let Brecker tighten the noose.
Rollins sighed.
We better hope Van Eck kills that boy.
Why?
Because otherwise I'll have to.
Rollins straightened the knot of his pinless tie and headed down to the casino floor. The problem of Kaz Brecker could wait to be solved another day. Right now, there was money to be made.
This book is over, but the story continues. Keep listening after the credits to hear the beginning of Crooked Kingdom, Book 2 in the Six of Crows series, free.
This has been an Audible Studios production of Six of Crows, written by Lee Bardugo, performed by Jay Snyder, Brandon Rubin, David Ledoux, Lauren Fortgang, Roger Clark, Elizabeth Evans, and Tristan Morris. Producer, Mike Charzik. Copyright, 2015 by Lee Bardugo. Production copyright, 2015 by Audible Inc. Audible Studios is a division of Audible Inc.
And now a free preview of Crooked Kingdom, Book 2 in the Six of Crows series.
Chapter 1. Redvenko. Redvenko leaned against the bar and tucked his nose into his dirty shot glass. The whiskey had failed to warm him. Nothing could get you warm in this saints-forsaken city, and there was no escaping the smell, the throat-choking stew of bilge, clams, and wet stone that seemed to have soaked into his pores as if he'd been steeping in the city's essence like the world's worst cup of tea. It was most noticeable in the barrel, even more so in a miserable dump like this one, a squat tavern wedged into the lower floor of one of the slum's grimmest apartment buildings, its ceiling bowed by weather and shoddy construction, its beams blackened by soot from a fireplace that had long since ceased to function, the flue clogged by debris. The floor was covered in sawdust to soak up spilled lager, vomit, and whatever else the bar's patrons lost control of. Redvenko wondered how long it had been since the boards had been swept clean. He buried his nose more deeply in the glass, inhaling the sweet perfume of bad whiskey. It made his eyes water. "You're supposed to drink it, not snort it," said the barkeep with a laugh. Redvenko put his glass down and gazed at the man blearily. He was thick-necked and barrel-chested, a real bruiser. Redvenko had seen him toss more than one rowdy patron into the street, but it was hard to take him seriously dressed in the absurd fashion favored by the young men of the barrel. A pink shirt with sleeves that looked fit to split over huge biceps, a garish red and orange plaid waistcoat. He looked like a dandified softshell crab. "Tell me," said Redvenko. His courage wasn't good to begin with, and it was worse after a few drinks. "Why does city smell so bad, like old soup, like sink full of dishes?" The barman laughed. "That's just Ketterdam. You get used to it." Redvenko shook his head. He didn't want to get used to this city or its stink. His job with Councilman Hode had been dull, but at least his rooms had been dry and warm. As a treasured Grisha indenture, Redvenko had been kept in comfort, his belly full. He'd cursed Hode at the time, bored with his work shepherding the merchant's expensive cargo shipments across the sea, resenting the terms of his contract, the foolish bargain he'd made to get himself out of Ravka after the Civil War. But now he couldn't help thinking of the Grisha workshop at Hode's house, the fire burning merrily in the grate, brown bread served with slabs of butter and thick cuts of ham. After Hode had died, the Kerch Merchant Council had let Redvenko take on sea voyages to pay his way out of the indenture. The money was terrible, but what other options did he have? He was a Grisha squalor in a hostile city with no skills but the gifts with which he'd been born. "Another?" the barman asked, gesturing at Redvenko's empty glass. Redvenko hesitated. He shouldn't waste his money. If he was smart with his pennies, he would only need to rent himself out for one more voyage, maybe two, and he'd have enough money to pay off his indenture and buy himself a ticket to Ravka in a third-class berth. That was all he needed. He was due on the docks in less than an hour. Storms had been predicted, so the crew would rely on Redvenko to master the air currents and guide the ship calmly to whatever port they needed to reach. He didn't know where, and he didn't care. The captain would call coordinates, Redvenko would fill the sails or calm the skies, and then he would collect his pay. But the winds hadn't picked up yet. Maybe he could sleep through the first part of the voyage. Redvenko tapped the bar and nodded. What was a man to do? He deserved some comfort in this world. "I am not errand boy," he muttered. "What's that?" the barman asked as he poured out another drink. Redvenko gave a dismissive wave. This person, this common lout, could never understand. He toiled away in obscurity, hoping for what? An extra coin in his pocket? A warm glance from a pretty girl? He knew nothing of glory in battle, what it was to be revered. "You Ravkin?" Through the muzzy blur the whiskey had created, Retvenko came alert. "Why?" "No reason. You just sound Ravkin." Retvenko told himself to relax. Plenty of Ravkins came through Ketterdam looking for work. There was nothing on him that said Grisha. His cowardice filled him with disgust. At himself, the barman, this city. He wanted to sit and enjoy his drink. There was no one in the bar to jump him, and despite the barman's muscles, Redvenko knew he could handle him easily. But when you were Grisha, even staying still could mean courting trouble. There had been more rumors of disappearances in Ketterdam recently. Grisha vanishing from the streets or their homes, probably snapped up by slavers and sold to the highest bidder. Redvenko would not let that happen to him, not when he was so close to buying his way back to Ravka. He downed his whiskey, slammed a coin on the counter, and rose from the barstool. He left no tip. A man could work for a living. Redvenko felt a little unsteady as he headed outside, and the moist stink of the air didn't help. He put his head down and set his feet toward Fourth Harbor, letting the walk clear his head. 2 more voyages, he repeated to himself, a few more weeks at sea, a few more months in this city. He'd find a way to make it bearable. He wondered if some of his old friends might be waiting for him in Ravka. The young king was said to be handing out pardons like penny candy, eager to rebuild the Second Army, the Grisha military that had been decimated by the war. "Just 2 more trips," he said to no one, stamping his boots against the spring damp. How could it be this cold and wet this late in the year? Living in this city was like being trapped in the chilly armpit of a frost giant. He passed along Grafkanal, shivering as he glimpsed Black Veil Island tucked into the water's bend. That was where the Kirch wealthy had once buried their dead, in little stone houses above water level. Some trick of the climate kept the island shrouded in shifting mists, and there were rumors that the place was haunted. Redvenko hastened his steps. He wasn't a superstitious man. When you had power like his, there was no reason to fear what might lurk in the shadows. But who liked to walk by a graveyard? He burrowed deeper into his coat and made quick time down Havenstraat, keeping alert to the movements in every twisting alley. Soon he'd be back in Ravka, where he could stroll the streets without fear, assuming he got his pardon. Redvenko squirmed uncomfortably in his coat. The war had pitted Grisha against Grisha, and his side had been particularly brutal. He'd murdered former comrades, civilians, even children. But what was done could not be undone. King Nikolai needed soldiers, and Redvenko was a very good soldier. Redvenko nodded once to the guard stashed in the little booth at the entrance to Fourth Harbor and glanced over his shoulder, confirming he hadn't been followed. He made his way past the cargo containers to the docks, found the appropriate berth, and stood in line to register with the first mate. Redvenko recognized him from past voyages, always harried and ill-humored, scrawny neck poking from the collar of his coat. He held a thick sheaf of documents, and Redvenko glimpsed the purple wax seal of one of the members of the Kerch Merchant Council. Those seals were better than gold in this city, guaranteeing the best berths in the harbor and preferred access to the docks. And why did the councilmen garner such respect, such advantage? Because of coin. Because their missions brought profit to Ketterdam. Power meant something more in Ravka, where the elements bent to the will of the Grisha and the country was ruled by a proper king instead of a cadre of upstart merchants. Admittedly, Redvenko had tried to depose that king's father, but the point remained. "We're not ready for the rest of the crew just yet," the first mate said as Redvenko gave his name. "You can keep warm in the harbor master's office. We're waiting on our signal from the Council of Tides." "Good for you," Redvenko said, unimpressed. He glanced up at one of the black obelisk towers that loomed over the harbor. If there were any chance that the high and mighty Council of Tides could see him from their watchtower, he would have let them know exactly what he thought with a few choice gestures. They were supposedly Grisha, but had they ever lifted a finger to help the other Grisha in the city? To help those down on their luck who might have welcomed a bit of kindness? "No, they have not," he answered himself. The first mate winced. "Gazin, Redvenko, have you been drinking?" "No. You stink of whiskey." Redvenko sniffed. "Little bit whiskey." "Just dry out. Get yourself some coffee or strong Gerda. This cotton has to be in Gerholm in 2 weeks' time, and we aren't paying you to nurse a hangover below decks. Understood?" "Yes, yes," Redvenko said with a dismissive wave, already heading toward the harbor master's office. But when he was a few steps away, he flicked his wrist. A tiny whirlwind caught the papers the first mate was holding, sending them flying over the docks. "Damn it!" he shouted as he went scrambling over the wooden planks, trying to capture the pages of his manifest before they blew into the sea. Redvenko smiled with grim pleasure, then felt a wave of sadness overtake him. He was a giant among men, a gifted squaller, a great soldier, but here he was just an employee, a sad old Ravkin who spoke broken Kerch and drank too much. "Home," he told himself. "Soon I'll be home." He would get his pardon and prove himself once more. He would fight for his country. He would sleep under a roof that didn't leak and wear a blue wool kefta lined with a silver fox fur. He would be Emil Redvenko again, not this pathetic shadow. "There's coffee," said the clerk when Redvenko entered the harbor master's office, gesturing toward a copper urn in the corner. "Tea? There's coffee. This country." Redvenko filled a mug full of the dark sludge, more to warm his hands than anything. He couldn't bear the taste of it, certainly not without a healthy dose of sugar which the harbor master had neglected to supply. "Wind blowing in," said the clerk as a bell clanged outside, shaken by the rising breeze.
"I have ears," Redvenko grumbled.
"Don't think it will amount to much here, but once you get out of the harbor..."
"Be silent,"
Redvenko said sharply. He was on his feet, listening.
"What?"
said the clerk.
"There's..."
Redvenko put a finger to his lips.
"Someone cries out."
The sound had come from where the ship was docked.
"It's just gulls. Sun's coming up soon," and
Redvenko raised a hand, and a gust of air slammed the clerk back into the wall.
"I said be silent."
The clerk's mouth dropped open as he hung pinned to the slats.
"You're the Grisha they got for the crew?"
For saint's sake, was Redvenko going to have to pull the air from this boy's lungs and suffocate him into quiet? Through the waxy windows, Redvenko could see the sky beginning to turn blue as dawn arrived. He heard the squawking of gulls searching the waves for breakfast. Maybe the liquor was muddling his mind. Redvenko let the clerk drop to the ground. He'd spilled his coffee, but he didn't want to bother with another cup. "Told you it was nothing," said the clerk as he dragged himself to his feet. "Didn't have to get all heated up." The clerk dusted himself off and got resettled behind the desk. "I never met one of you before, Grisha." Redvenko snorted. The clerk probably had and simply didn't know it. "You get paid pretty good for the voyages?"
"Not good enough."
But whatever the clerk was going to say next was lost as the door to the office exploded in a hail of splinters. Redvenko's hands went up to shield his face. He ducked and rolled behind the clerk's desk for cover. A woman entered the office. Black hair, golden eyes. Shoo. The clerk reached for a shotgun Redvenko saw strapped beneath the desk.
"They've come for the payroll," he shouted. "Ain't no one taking the payroll."
Redvenko watched in shock as the gangly clerk stood like some kind of avenging warrior and opened fire. By all that was holy, nothing could motivate the Kurch like cash. Redvenko peeked around the desk in time to see the shotgun blast strike the woman directly in the chest. She was thrown backward and collided with the door jamb, crumpling to the floor. He smelled the sharp burn of gunpowder, the metallic tang of blood. Redvenko's belly gave a shaming lurch. It had been a long time since he'd seen someone shot down in front of him, and that had been in a time of war. "Ain't no one taking the payroll," the clerk repeated with satisfaction. But before Redvenko could reply, the shoe woman wrapped her bloody hand around the doorframe, hauling herself to her feet. Redvenko blinked. Just how much whiskey had he had? The woman marched forward. Through the remains of her tattered blouse, Redvenko saw blood, flesh pocked with buckshot, and the glint of what looked like metal. The clerk fumbled to reload, but the woman was too fast. She grabbed the gun from his hands and swatted him down with it, knocking him sideways with terrible force. She tossed the gun aside and turned her golden eyes on Redvenko.
"Take payroll,"
Redvenko shouted, clambering backward. He dug in his pockets and tossed his nearly empty wallet at her.
"Take what you want."
The woman smiled slightly at that. With pity? Amusement? Redvenko did not know, but he understood that she had not come for the money at all. She had come for him, and it didn't matter if she was a slaver or a mercenary or something else entirely. She would face a soldier, not some cowering weakling. He leapt to his feet, muscles responding reluctantly to his demands, and shifted into fighting stance. His arms arced forward. A howling wind swept through the room, tossing a chair, then the clerk's desk, then the steaming coffee urn at the woman. She batted each item away with little interest, as if she were brushing aside stray cobwebs. Redvenko focused his power and shoved both his hands forward, feeling his ears pop as the pressure dropped and the wind swelled in a surging thunderhead. Maybe this woman couldn't be stopped by bullets. Let's see how she fared against the fury of a storm. The woman growled as the gale seized her, hurtling her back through the open doorway. She seized the jamb, trying to keep hold. Redvenko laughed. He'd forgotten how good it felt to fight. Then, from behind him, he heard a loud crack, the shriek of nails torn free and rending timber. He looked over his shoulder and caught the briefest glimpse of the dawn sky, the wharf. The wall was gone. Strong arms seized him, clasping his hands to his sides, preventing him from using his power. He was rising, sailing upward, the harbor shrinking beneath him. He saw the roof of the harbormaster's office, the body of the first mate in a heap on the dock, the ship Redvenko had been meant to sail on, its deck a mess of broken boards, bodies piled near the shattered masts. His attackers had been there first. The air was cold on his face. His heart pounded a ragged rhythm in his ears. "Please," he begged as they soared higher, unsure of what he was pleading for. Afraid to move too suddenly or too much, he craned his neck to look at his captor. Redvenko released a terrified moan, somewhere between a sob and the panicked whine of an animal caught in a trap. The man holding him was Shu. His black hair pulled into a tight bun, his golden eyes narrowed against the rush of the wind, and from his back emerged two vast wings that beat against the sky, hinged, gracefully wrought in looping silver filigree and taut canvas. Was he an angel? A demon? Some strange mechanical come to life? Had Redvenko simply lost his mind? In the arms of his captor, Emil Redvenko saw the shadow they made cast upon the glittering surface of the sea far below. Two heads, two wings, four legs. He had become a great beast, and yet that beast would devour him. His prayers turned to screams, but both went unanswered.
We hope you enjoyed this free preview of Crooked Kingdom, Book 2 in the Six of Crows series. To keep the story going, get the complete book today.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.